How does giving to others benefit me? How does giving to others benefit me? How do I get anything from giving to others? When we hear a question like that, we think, that's not a Christian question. That's an awful question. Surely Christians are meant to give without thinking about getting anything back. We are to be givers regardless of any return. Surely no Christian would ever ask, what do I get from giving? Right? Wrong. Because in this chapter, Paul motivates Christian giving by highlighting three benefits to the givers. You see that, for example, in verse 10. In this matter, I give my judgment. This benefits you. What is the this? Well, if you've been following along with us as we've been going through this chapter, it's all about giving. And that's what follows that verse as well. The this is giving. Giving benefits you. So it would appear that God knew our weakness when it came to giving, our tendency to weigh the pros and cons, to look for a return, and instead of saying, you shouldn't even think about that, never mind ask it, He not only lets us ask it, but He gives us the answer. He lists at least three benefits that come to the givers, so that by giving, we also get. So the question we want to ask is, how does giving to others benefit me? A question we are allowed to ask and which God provides the answer for. As you know, this letter is all about strength through weakness. Strength through weakness. And it's also, as an application of that, about how to strengthen the weak. This chapter is about how to strengthen those who are financially weak. And we've seen how the Macedonians, their example of giving was to motivate the Corinthians to give. Then we saw how Christ's example, though he was rich, he became poor. That example is to motivate giving to others. And now he comes to give because you, the givers, benefit from giving. So let's look at that reason, that motivation, as outlined for us in verses 10 through 15. So what's the first benefit that the apostle lists here to those who are givers? Well, he says, first of all, giving assures our hearts. Giving puts God's stamp on our hearts that says, you are mine. Very few Christians go through life without at times asking, am I really a Christian? How can I be sure? Some people are plagued by that all their days, but even the most confident in their faith, the most assured, have moments when they waver, they question. And so we need help in different levels, to different degrees, to get and keep assurance of our faith, a confidence that we truly are believers. And there are many ways that the Bible gives us to assure our hearts, but here in this chapter, giving is to be a means, a way of assuring us and persuading us, yes, I must be a Christian. So let's look at that in verses 10 through 12. I want you to look for two kinds of words, desiring words and readiness words. Okay, let's see how many we've got here. Verse 10, in this matter I give my judgment. This benefits you who a year ago started not only to do this work, but also to desire to do it. So now finish doing it as well, so that your readiness in desiring it may be matched by your completing it out of what you have. For if the readiness is there, it is acceptable according to what a person has, not according to what he does not have. There are two truths come out here. Our hearts desire to give, and our hearts are ready to give. That's a Christian heart. Let's look at that first one. Our hearts desire to give. And that was true of the Corinthians. It's not always true, is it? We can give without desiring to give. We can do something without a desire in our hearts to do it. We can do something that we don't really want to do. We can force ourselves. We can drum up enough self-will to just push ourselves through, discipline ourselves, and do what we don't want to do. Maybe, children, you might be familiar with this, as we adults also are. Mom and Dad tell you, go and tidy your room. You go and tidy your room, but you don't really want to do it. It would never have occurred to you. You never stop to think, I really want to tidy my room tonight. It's not often happens, does it? Well, we could say our heart is not in it. And that's sometimes true of giving. We can give, we can put money in the collection plate or give online, but our heart's not really in it. We're doing it, but there's not a ton of desire behind it. But then there are other times when we have huge desire. We're passionate about giving. We really enjoy giving. Now it's true of the Corinthians here. As he says, you not only did this work, but also desired to do it. They not only gave, they wanted to give. They were blessed with doing and desiring. Their hearts were in it. That's a Christian heart. But then he says our hearts are ready to give. And that's different. You can have a desire to give, but not yet. Maybe later. Maybe once I get to a certain financial level or build up a certain amount of resources. I mean, we really want to. We really desire to, but not quite ready. We're not quite there yet. That was not true of the Corinthians. As Paul says twice here, finish doing it as well, verse 11, so that your readiness in desiring it may be matched by your completing it out of what you have. For if the readiness is there, it's a beautiful thing. They wanted to give, and they were ready to give. They had a passion to give, and they were prepared to give. And Paul here has this phrase which is fascinating. He says in verse 11, finish doing it as well so that your readiness in desiring it may be matched by your completing it out of what you have. For if the readiness is there, it is acceptable according to what a person has, not according to what he does not have. How does this encourage us? Well, what Paul is saying here is that the Corinthians were not going to be judged by God, assessed by God by how much they gave, but by how much they wanted to give and how much they were ready to give. He's basically saying, when God looks at givers, his Christian people giving, he's not counting the money. He is counting the passion and the preparedness. Because As Paul says, God is not looking for you to give what you do not have. We can't do that. We can only give out of what we have. But even if we don't have much, he says, if the readiness is there, it is acceptable according to what a person has. Therefore, he's saying this readiness, this willingness, it multiplied the value of their giving. They may have been those who were putting in, I don't know what currency they had, let's call it a drachma. If they were putting in one drachma, because that drachma was multiplied by their desire and their readiness, God looked down on it as if it was a million drachmas. There could have been somebody who was giving a million drachmas, a very wealthy person, but without any desire, without any readiness. And when God looks down, he values that drachma over here more than the million over there. So, let's thank God. If he's blessed us with a desire to give and a readiness to give, that's not normal. That's not natural to the human heart. We're naturally, in our sinful state, getters, not givers. And when we are given a desire to give and a readiness and a preparedness to give, we're anxious to give, Paul is telling us here that that's God at work. That's God who's done this. And you can look at that desire and look at that readiness and say, well, this can assure me that I have real faith, that my faith is genuine, that my faith has God's stamp of approval upon it. And let's also ask God for more desire, more than more dollars. It might be that we just can't give more than we are giving. And that you look at it and you might think, well, it's so little. It's nothing. It's just a drop in the ocean. But that gift can be multiplied and maximized, can have a huge cryptocurrency type of return in God's eyes if it comes with our desire and our readiness, which is a great encouragement to us. So it's not so much God says, how much are you giving? It's how much do you want to give? How much desire, how much passion is there? And I think it would be true to say that the more we desire to give and the more ready we are to give, God will eventually give us more to give. When the desire is there, he'll put the dollars there. God delights in desires more than in dollars. So let's assure our hearts when we give and we see a desire beside the dollar and a readiness besides the dollar. So is that it? I just need to desire and be ready? No. Paul goes on to say there must be action as well. And in verses 10 to 11, we find the second benefit. Giving boosts our witness. Giving boosts our witness. We see it in three steps. We start our giving, we continue our giving, and we complete our giving. Let's look at that in verses 10 and 11. He says, in this matter, I give my judgment. This benefits you who a year ago started not only to do this work, but also to desire to do it. So now finish doing it as well, so that your readiness in desiring it may be matched by your completing it out of what you have. Paul here looks And he sees a difference between the Corinthian giving, between Christian giving and non-Christian giving. I'm sure we've all seen appeals that come through the media and other means. Maybe something attracts a lot of media attention, a great need, a famine or a tsunami hits an area or an earthquake or a war, something like that. There's something that catches the attention of our journalists and editors and news people, and they make a big splash of it. And lots of people start giving money, and celebrities say, well, I'm giving this, I'm pledging that. I don't know if this happens in the U.S., but in the U.K., there was a thing every year called Comic Relief. And it was a, what do you call these things? You know, people in phone banks, and you were allowed to phone in and pledge money. And all that evening, there would be entertainers and celebrities who would sing their songs, do their funny shows, perform in different ways, and then see how much they're giving. And that was to motivate more people to give. And almost always, there was a tremendous amount pledged, tens and tens of millions of pounds. And then, sort of a few months later, in this very small print, somewhere in the back pages of the newspapers, as it was then, you'd have, well, this was pledged, but the actual final amount was not quite there. Went far, far from it. And part of it is just people can give in an emotional surge or promise to give in an emotional swaying. But then when it actually comes to it, parting with a check, filling out the online form and pressing send, not so easy. You can start, but do you continue when the emotions go and the attention goes? Do you complete? And Paul's saying, Corinthians, I'm looking at you, and I'm seeing that you've begun, and you've continued, but now it's time to complete. You've made pledges to support this poor church in Jerusalem, persecuted church, and that's wonderful, and you've given a lot, but you've not reached what you promised. Let's finish the job. Let's complete it, because that's what makes a Christian different to all others. They start, they continue, and they complete, because their motivation is not emotion, but genuine, godly care and concern and love, which isn't dependent on the swaying to and fro of human emotion. So we complete. So part of giving is a witness. Paul was concerned that the Corinthians' witness was being damaged by their failure to finish. Macedonians, they finished. Corinthians, I want this to benefit you. I want you to maintain your witness as a Christian church. Therefore, let's finish the job. And when we look at ourselves as individuals or ourselves as a church, part of our church's witness is our giving. If you look at the majority of charitable giving, it comes from Christians and churches. It's always interesting when you look at the politicians who speak so much about caring for the poor and providing for the less well-off, when sometimes their taxes are leaked or they run for president and the taxes are usually released, you see that for all the gazillions they have, that they give like the tiniest amount to charity. But the Christian is different. Christian churches are different. We give. It's just part of who we are. It's part of our witness. That our churches would be known as giving. And that boosts our witness in the community, because the community gets to know this is a giving church. But it also boosts our witness amongst the receivers of our giving. When First Byron funds are distributed by our deacons to so many different causes, and through our missions and evangelism committee, through our benevolent fund, then our witness is boosted. Our words are backed up with these gifts, and therefore it really puts that witness much deeper into the hearts of those who benefit from receiving this. Giving money is part of going on mission. We can go on mission. We can boost the church's witness by our giving. When the celebrities and the NGOs and the TV programs have moved on, we stay. We continue. And that is a great witness to what motivates us and why Christians are different. But what if I give and I give too much? And yeah, I've been doing well, so I'll give a lot, but what if I do and then I kind of hit a downturn? Is that not a bit risky? Surely I should hold back something in reserve. Well, what does Paul say about that? He says, we'll enjoy being receivers from other givers if that happens. And in that way, we get our third benefit. Giving unites our family. Giving unites our family. And we see that in verses 13 to 15. Look at verse 13. I don't mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but that as a matter of fairness, your abundance at the present time should supply their need so that their abundance may supply your need, that there may be fairness. As it is written, whoever gathered much had nothing left over, and whoever gathered little had no lack. The apostle there is quoting Exodus 16:18, where the manna was given by God, and he said to them, just take what you need. Don't take too much. Don't take too little. If you take too much, it will rot on you. Just take what you need. And as it says, those who gathered much had nothing extra. Whoever gathered little, they had no lack. There was a fairness. And it was a fairness enforced by God. But now, this is a fairness that is enforced by grace. No longer is this an external divine mandate, but it's a desire that grows from the heart. That just as when God gives me an abundance, I share, so when I go into lack, those with an abundance will share with me. There's an equity, there's a fairness. Our abundance supplies others' needs, he says. God didn't need to do that. God could deal directly with every needy person, every needy Christian. He could ensure just him and that person, I will give you what you need. And he wouldn't involve any other Christians in any other churches, but he's chosen not to do that. He's chosen to work through individual Christians and churches to supply needs. That's what he's speaking about here. So that we don't just retreat into our individual, isolated, independent silos, but so that we are dependent upon one another. We supply out of our abundance. But others will also share from their abundance when we need. There always comes a time when givers become receivers and receivers become givers. And that can be financial. It can be, and it has been in church history, that churches who were very wealthy and were givers, they declined and they became the needy. And churches who had nothing were blessed by God and they gave to those who previously gave to them. That's just the beautiful way God works. So it can be financial reciprocity, but it's often spiritual. We could be one of those churches which is financially well off and we don't need finances from other churches, but the churches we give to can also give to us spiritually to meet spiritual needs out of their abundance. That's one of the reasons why often the collection plates are going around, we receive a mission report or we watch a mission video. Because we are giving financially, and often those who are the recipients of these finances are speaking to us from here or through the screen and telling us wonderful things that are happening spiritually and how God is blessing these churches and countries and missions and outreaches. And therefore, as we are giving out of our abundance, we are also receiving out of their abundance, that there may be fairness. God makes everything work out so that givers are receivers and receivers are givers. There's a reciprocity, and it has the effect of uniting us. It's not like, well, they're big giving churches and they're just always takers. No. God's arranged this in a way that He brings us together. He unites us as a Christian family. God unites His people through giving. This is not social justice. This is spiritual justice. This isn't enforced confiscation of wealth. This is not excessive taxation. This is just grace that moves Christian hearts to give because of what we've received. It's free will giving from free grace motives. And it's the answer to our world's economic problems. Pure capitalism and pure communism destroys. Christian principles like this, Christian economy, is the way to unite and to distribute and ensure equity, not equality, but equity amongst rich and poor. God unites His people through giving and through receiving. So, how does giving to others benefit me? It assures my heart, it boosts my witness, and it unites our family. And therefore, give to meet needs, and you'll get your needs met. That sounds almost heretical, doesn't it? And yet, it's in the Bible. We have to be careful. So, we would say the gospel, salvation, that comes only by receiving. The gospel is about receiving alone. There's no giving. There's no giving to get when it comes to salvation, when it comes to being saved. It's just all gimme, gimme, gimme. We've got nothing to give. We need to receive. The gospel is about receiving alone, but that gospel receiving is never alone. It never exists on its own. That gospel receiving comes along with a gospel giving. A gospel giving heart. We're saved by receiving, but we prove our salvation. In one way, that of giving. And just in case we think that we're still hesitant about this, Jesus Himself was motivated in His giving in this way. Remember, this is just after describing Christ's self-giving. We're told in Hebrews that for the joy that was set before Him, He endured the cross, not despising the shame. That was a motive. Part of the motive of Christ was to get joy from what He was doing. When He was giving, 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 He was doing it partly to assure His own heart, partly to boost His witness, and partly to unite His family. These aren't base motives. These are gospel, godly, Christ-like motives. So, as we begin a new week, let's begin by using our giving to get benefit for ourselves as well. There's nothing wrong with that. We can assure our hearts, grow our confidence that we are Christians. We can boost our witness, increase our missionary message. And we can unite God's family, our church family, and the worldwide church family by giving and receiving. One of the great joys, I believe, of heaven will be seeing how our giving benefited not just others, but us, in ways we didn't recognize, we didn't connect. We didn't see the relationship between our giving and our getting. And part of heaven will be discovering that. But it will also be about discovering how our receiving from others blessed the others who gave us and benefited them. So much to discover. Can we get from giving? Yes. We maybe don't give to get, but we definitely get from giving. Let's pray. Fair God, God of fairness, you have been more than fair to us. Therefore, help us to be more than fair to others, for Jesus' sake.